Hello, this is Dr. Alice Boys, and I'm back with another cognitive behavioral therapy audio guide. Today, I'm going to give you an introduction to understanding your emotions. And particularly, we're going to talk about the effect of emotions on thoughts, on cognition, so the C in cognitive behavioral therapy. And one of the reasons that understanding your emotions is important is because it's a foundation step in understanding your thoughts and behaviors. And to start understanding the effect of your emotions on your thinking processes, you need to understand a wee bit about the evolved purpose of emotions. So, just like we've evolved for orgasms to feel good, because that was helpful for the continuation of the species, we've also evolved our emotions for specific purposes. So different emotions have different kind of evolved purposes, and for some emotions it's easier to see what that is than for others. But I'm just going to include a couple of examples today. So I'm going to talk about anxiety, and then I'll give one more example after that. So let's start with anxiety. And so anxiety is basically a threat detection mechanism. And the important thing to realize is that it detects potential threats. So lots of the threats for everybody, lots of the threats that our anxiety system detects turn out to be nothing. And you can see that our anxiety system works fairly well in serving its purpose, in that most of us stay alive for, a fairly long time. So it detects a lot of the potential dangers that we could get ourselves into. Let's take an example of, imagine that you are walking through a field and you see, you're walking through a field of grass and you see the grass moving, and you think, what is it, what is it, could that be? Maybe it's a snake, assuming you live somewhere where there are snakes, right? So let's imagine maybe this is a caveman walking through a field somewhere where they have snakes. And so the idea is that when for the rest of the time you're walking through that field, you're not going to be looking around at the sunshine. You're not going to be thinking ahead to how nice it's going to be to see your partner when you get home. You're going to be looking out, scanning the grass for more movement, for more signs of threat. So what happens when we feel negative emotions is that our thinking gets negative, narrow, rigid, and self-focused. So by the negative is obvious, right? So you're looking out for signals of threat more than you're looking out for signals of safety. Your attention narrows, so you're not thinking about all of the cues in the environment. You're just focusing in, laser beamed in on those signs of threat. Rigid is that your thinking is it's not easily distracted. So one of the reasons that negative emotions cause people so much bother a lot of the time is that negative emotions are designed to grab our attention in a way that is very forceful and that we can't distract ourselves. And then self-focused is about the idea that negative emotions signal to us that there maybe is something dangerous in our current environment, and we need to be focused on that. So they put us in self-protective mode. Okay, so let's. I said I was going to give two examples, and the second example I'm going to give is a wee bit less obvious, and that's about sadness. So sadness and also kind of disappointment. If you think about the symptoms that people get when they're depressed, some of the most prominent symptoms are withdrawal and avoidance, and rumination, which basically means overthinking. And one evolutionary theory of sort of sadness and disappointment is that one of the evolved functions of that is that when something goes wrong in our life, that instead of blundering on, we take a step back. So we stop acting for a while, because the idea is if something has been going wrong, then maybe if we keep acting, that we're going to stumble into things that are that take us further in the wrong direction. So that's where that tendency to go through a period of withdrawal and avoidance comes from when you're feeling sad or disappointed emotions. The rumination aspect, so the overthinking, is the idea that if something's gone wrong, that's triggered those sad or disappointed emotions, the brain has kind of come up with the idea that it would be a good thing to think in a concentrated way about what the problem is. And with both anxiety and sadness and disappointment, it's a mechanism that's there, that's evolved because it's helpful in general. But obviously, there are times, and anxiety disorders and depression are really obvious examples of those times, when it goes into hyperdrive and a mechanism that on balance has some things that are helpful about us about it becomes something that's really unhelpful for people. Now you know something about why emotions affect thoughts. You know that they're designed to do that. They're designed that way on purpose. We can start talking a wee bit about the specific kinds of thought distortions that people have when they are, for example, depressed or anxious. So when people are feeling a lot of negative emotions. So remember that negative emotions are mainly a threat detection mechanism, and they're a mechanism that detects lots of threats that turn out to be nothing. Let's maybe start with an example. So let's say that you've got a repairman around at your house, and the person is a bit blunt with you, and you might think, I must have said something wrong. Okay, so that's an example of two of the common kinds of thinking biases. So one is that you took something that was ambiguous and interpreted it as negative. So someone being a bit blunt isn't necessarily a negative sign. It's kind of an ambiguous sign. And you also personalized it. So that's the self-focused aspect, is that you are thinking that it was probably something to do with you as opposed to the million other different things that it could be. Let's take another example. So imagine that your boss asks you to redo something. So something that might happen there is you might start to catastrophize. So you might take something that's mildly negative and start thinking about that you might be just about to get fired or whatever. So people have that tendency to interpret ambiguous information as negative and mildly negative information as catastrophic. Something else that might happen there is that, say your boss has asked you to redo like a small section of something, you might be kind of omitting. So you might be not looking at the fact that they didn't ask you to redo anything about the rest of the document. So if you were feeling better, you might be thinking about the fact that, well, if they just asked you to do that, you know your boss, and that if your boss only asks you to redo a little something and didn't say anything about the rest, that probably means that they were happy with the rest of what you did. So you're just picking out that one little element of negative feedback and not paying attention to the other feedback that you got that wasn't negative, so the other feedback that was neutral or was positive. Something else that happens is that people have memory biases. So I don't particularly mean that something goes terribly wrong with your memory, but what happens is that people tend to remember, for example, they remember their failures or their perceived failures and don't remember their perceived successes. The other thing that people do is that they tend to anticipate negatives. So they see what's going to potentially be bad about something and not see the things that might potentially be good about it. So, for example, imagine your partner's going away for a week and you're thinking about that you're going to be lonely, but you're not thinking about the fact that it might be nice to have the house to yourself, that there might be some nice elements about being home alone for a while. So as well as people picking out negatives from past events, so scanning back over something that's happened and thinking about the negative elements of it. People also look for threat cues. So remember, going back to the dude walking through the field, who is looking out for, who's scanning the field for signs of threat. And people especially do that when they're anxious. So they especially look out for signs of disapproval. So maybe if they're talking to someone, they look out for signs that the conversation might not be going very well. And one of the really interesting things that happens is that often people use their own feelings as the guide. So part of that self-focused mechanism is that very often people make the connection between, well, I feel anxious in this, say, conversation, and therefore it must not be going very well. And so that's something a really interesting an interesting thing to be aware of if that's something that you do. And the other thing would be, as I said, looking out for, in particular, for negative cues. So maybe if the person is talking to a group of people, paying attention to the people in the audience who are looking disinterested, and not paying attention to the people who are looking more interested. Now, you might be asking yourself, well, why are people so concerned about what other people think of them? Where's the threat there? That's not really like the snake in the grass. And something else that's important to understand from an evolutionary theory perspective is that we've evolved to be particularly sensitive to two main kinds of threats. And the first kind is physical threats, and the second kind is social threats. So one of the most dangerous things that could happen to us back in our environment of evolutionary adaptation was that we got excluded from our tribe, so that we got left behind and left to fend for ourselves. So that's why that we've evolved to be so highly sensitive to cues of interpersonal acceptance and rejection. I think I will leave it there for today. I really appreciate that you listening to this. I really appreciate that you thought that this was going to be a worthwhile, listening to this guide was going to be a worthwhile use of your time today. And I hope you enjoyed it and got a wee bit out of it. And I hope that if you're suffering with something at the moment, that it gets easier for you soon. And if you want to know anything more about me, if you stumbled on this audio guide anyway other than through my website, then you might like to know about that. So it's aliceboys.com. Alice spelt the usual way, like Alice in Wonderland, and boys spelt Boyes. So that's Boy, like boy, Echo Sierra. So Americans probably will have no chance of understanding my accent when it comes to spelling my name. So there you go. So it's aliceboys.com, and I have also got a Facebook page. So thanks again, and I hope you have a good day. See ya.